Welcome everyone to episode 44 of our podcast Up on Foil. Today with the Gav Blake, Gav at Hydrofoil. And let me introduce us real quick. I'm Matt. I'm an average foiler. I'm struggling with the paddle, but enjoying the parawing. I have this podcast and a little YouTube channel. And you are Gav Hydrofoil, YouTube sensation from my point of view. You documented your journey into downwinding, sub downwinding, and it was all at the time for me that was exceptional because I would more or less I was at the same spot, really struggling. But then you took off, and I just stayed where I am. And now you're kind of a parawing expert, really. And with your channel, you're raising money for Bear Cottage Children's Hospice in Sydney. And when you have to earn money, and I think you still have to do that, you fly a rescue helicopter. That's super exciting. So thank you, Gav, for being on the show. Is there anything you want to add right away?
No, thank you. It's very kind introduction there. Thank you very much. I'm not sure about sensation. I'm sure we'll get on to some of those points in a moment. But it's been a bit of a wild journey, not where I expected I was going to end up, if I'm honest with you. But it kind of worked out through the charity, and people were getting really interested and asking lots of questions. So it grew. It's exciting to see where it's going to go in the next year or so. It seems to be gathering momentum, and I jumped on board with this powering business, and I'm absolutely loving it and encouraging people to get involved. And it's really interesting. I'm seeing a real divide at the moment between people who want to get into it, people, the haters, and then the other people that are on the fence. And, it's really interesting seeing the two sides of it. And interestingly, today I was out in the perfect power. In fact, I did a downwind run with the SUP, which was terrible, with a group of people. And then I went out on the power wing and had an amazing session on my own for about an hour and a half. And I was out there thinking to myself, why are people not doing this? I don't understand it. It was just poles apart from the experience I had earlier on in the day to how I was experiencing it then. And it's an interesting one. I'm sure we'll talk about it, but I'm fully hooked into it.
We can just get right into that, because you said that with the paddle, it was not a good session. With the pairing, it was. I assume it depends really on the conditions. The other way around as well, where you had troubles with the parawing and would have wished for a paddle session?
There's been a lot of those. I think it's an interesting one because I did learn, as you mentioned, I went through the hurt locker of learning to paddle, and I dedicated a lot of time and energy into it. So it took me, about a year of doing it almost every day. With my work, I can get on the water a lot. In a week, in the span of 8 days, there's 2 days where I can't. And so I had a lot of time to be able to do it, even if it was just for an hour or so. But I dedicated the best part of a year to get competent. And I'm at the stage now where I can, I can paddle up foils in flat water and get up and pump around and smaller foils. And so for sure, there are conditions where I can paddle up that I wouldn't be able to on a power wing. And I think we're starting to see lots of people who experiment, but I think we're starting to see that power winging is very location and condition based. And so people that live in really, if you live on a bay, or if you live on onshore conditions, or somewhere that's enclosed waters, that's really windy, off the top of my head, I'm thinking down in Melbourne where you got foil rat, that's perfect power wing conditions. I wouldn't even bother to downwind SUP in those. Where we are in Sydney, it's really 50-50, and it all depends on what the day is like. So if it's a good day for paddling, I'll still do that. If it's a power wing, and to be honest with you, I'm probably doing about 50-50 at the moment, I would say.
Okay.
Probably actually more power winging at the moment. And as I'm getting better at it, I'm finding that those conditions are becoming more frequent as well. The risk factor is going down, the stress factor goes down, and my success goes up and up. And I'm finding myself going out in much bigger, gnarlier conditions than I ever would have done 3 months ago, 2 months ago. And half of that's down to the gear. The gear that's coming out is massively improved. We'll talk about that, I'm sure. But I think that's, and I do want to talk about this as we go on, I think it does depend on where you live and the conditions that you get to which route you should go down initially. But be under no illusion that paddling is like 10 times harder. Like it is, you know, it is probably the hardest form. I think proning is maybe up there with one of the hardest. I think, you know, prone foiling, because again, it's very conditions based. But
how is your
to put
proning?
It into perspective, it took me, as I said, a year to paddle, to be competent. And it took me about 4 sessions on the power wing to really like start packing it away and downwinding, like 4 sessions. Wow. And I was like, you know, really in tune with it. You know, that comes with a lot of skills over the years of winging and kiting and, you know, surfing and putting them all together. But it's remarkably easier than to surf paddle, that's for sure.
How's your proning?
Yeah, good. Like, as I said, I did that before. So I winged initially and then I proned. And again, I have this character trait where I almost like being bad at something and proving myself I can get it. So I've got like quite an addictive personality. And so I get my claws into something and I just want to do it. So with proning, again, I probably spent the best part of 8 months just solely doing that. Like I'd go out in anything, like, you know, the amount of sessions I went out where you just really shouldn't be proning. It was, you know, if it was shore dumping, if it was like onshore, you name it, I was out there. And I just wanted to do the connections, you know, that was the key to it. And like having the ability. And again, I learned the hard way, just figured it out, the right gear, the right board, the right conditions, the right location. And then once you get all of that right, it then actually becomes pretty simple, quite straightforward. I think the hard bit is at the early stages, I just didn't know. I just didn't know that, you know, that beach wasn't good for it or that foil wasn't great for it, which is why I started doing the YouTube channel, was to try and, you know, educate people and to try and let them learn from my mistakes. And that's how it all started and sort of snowballed from there, really. But yeah, so, but really proning, cool. I love it. And I'm at the point now where I sort of, as I said, I pick and choose. So if the conditions are good one day, I'll go proning. If it's good for downwinding, if it's good for winging. And so I'm now at a point where I can really just cherry pick. And it's lovely to be able to do that. Like it's, you know.
Is it? Because I was just asking for the good conditions for SUP foiling or para winging. Does it depend on the direction of the wind or the waves, basically? Or are there also wind strength that are better suited for para winging, depending size, obviously, or paddling?
Yeah, I think it's a combination of all of those things, really. It's, you know, wind direction, the wind strength has got a major, anything less than 15 knots for me now, the bumps have got to be really good. And you know, that would probably dictate a paddle, a SUP paddle, rather than power winging if it was less than 15 knots. Unless, of course, you haven't got a shuttle on offer or it's onshore. And in which case, then I'll use quite a big power wing, like a 5 meter, which is not ideal, but it gets you up and then then you can pack it away and have fun. But so anything under than 15 knots is definitely a SUP day. And then the other extreme is that when it starts getting like really big rolling swells, that's when I then SUP again. So anything in between that, I'll power wing. And the reason for that really is just because I just feel more comfortable on the SUP. So when it gets really gnarly, because I've spent so much time doing it now, and I'm sure that will change as time comes on and people get better and I get better and the gear gets better. But right now there's definitely limitations to it, but I'm exploring those limitations. And interestingly, last week I went out in, it was gusting 48 knots and wow. I was on a 1.9 power wing. I'm completely in control. Like it was amazing. Yeah. And so this is where the gear is going now. It's like, you know, a power wing is being able to cope with those extreme conditions, which, you know, wingers were getting blown off the water and I was like just having a great time. So yeah, it's
1.9. That is super small. Which one was that? And wasn't it super nervous?
Look, it's not, yeah, it's not, it is a bit twitchy, but it's manageable. Like it's absolutely fine. That's the Ozone, the Pocket Rocket, great power wing. Like it's a really, really good one, that one. And it just performed incredibly well in those overpower conditions. Like, it was twitchy, but it wasn't, you know, like it was absolutely fine. It was, I've never used a wing that small in my life. Like I think the smallest I've ever used is a 3 meter and that felt really twitchy. This felt quite comfortable. I was, you know, in the harness, I was locked in. It does wander a bit, but it was fine. It was great. Like I was great time. And this was in an enclosed bay. And so there was an outgoing tide. So the bumps were like head high. And I was on a small foil. I think it was like a 700, like 720 surf foil and a 60 liter board. It was just incredible. It's just, I can't, you know, explain how much fun that is. Like, it's just so good.
That is so cool. I want to get into that. Also, the harness part, because for me personally, that's super important. If you see me wobbling around, Gav, that's just, I'm standing on a balance board. I'm trying to improve my balance because I think it's important as well. If ever I were to get back into sub-foiling, giving it another go. So that's just my practice that I do. So you said that you were use a harness. The last time I was using a Parawing was the 3 meter Roger, I think it was. And it was around maybe 25 knots, a little over. It was a little too big for me. And I didn't have a harness. And it almost ripped my arms out. And I just hoped, or I thought, with a harness, that would have been a lot easier. Is that like winging with a harness? Is that the same kind of feeling?
No, I think winging, you have a bit more control of the wing with a harness. I've always used a harness. So I just naturally at the beginning went with one, but I know a lot of people that don't. And actually occasionally, because I'm using so many different power wings, a lot of them don't have harnesses, or I haven't swapped them out, or I've left it in my car or whatever. And so I do chop and change. And so a really good power wing, you don't necessarily need a harness because they're, you know, you can control them really well. I think the early doors, you know, power wings that we had, like without a harness, they would, like, as you said, rip your arms. I know people that have had injuries with their shoulders with it because they, you know, they just yanked them out, or when they deployed it, it's just gone boom. So, you know, I think you do have to be careful, and a little bit of like land drills will avoid those problems. But for personally, I'm a massive advocate of the harness, and the sole reason for that is that it gives you like this really easy entry into upwind. And I'm using a chest harness at the moment. So in fact, actually, I got this from Ken Adgate. He messaged me and said, hey, look, try this. And I've never used one before, and it's epic. So this is what I love about the power winging community. It's so tight. It's unbelievable. Everybody all around the world are sharing these tips because everyone's figuring it out. And so, you know, he was saying, yeah, try this. And then I went and bought this like stretchy thing that I've put on the best. We're all like amending these harnesses. So now I use this, it's like a chest rig. It's from Ride Engine, actually. Their normal chest harness, but it's got a backpack in it, which is normally got like a water, wherever they're called,
a camelback
thing. Yeah. And so I took that out, and then I put this pouch on, which I've just sort of like attached onto it. And now I ride with two spare power wings in the back so that I can swap them out. So I'll go out, like today was a prime example. It was really up and down. I went out with a 3, I then changed to the 4. And then went back down to a 1.9. You know, that's the range. That it was a very strange day today. We've got a storm system coming through, but normally you don't have to do that. But it, you know, I will always go with a backup. And what I normally do is if I'm doing a downwind send, if I'm doing a shuttle, I'll get up with my big one. So let's say, for example, it's 20 knots. I'll use a 4 meter to get up, pack it away, and I'll have a small one as a spare. In case it goes ballistic and I need to get up. But I rarely use the spares, to be honest with you. It normally, you know, once you get up and you go, it's packed away and it's forgotten. So
do you usually bring a Parawing as like a backup system when you go paddling?
No, I don't. No,
never had a paddle broken or something.
I've got more confidence with the paddle than I do with the Parawing. And the big problem with Parawinging is when the wind drops. That's when you're in trouble. So when it drops below the critical point of that Parawing board foil combination, then you're going to struggle to get up. And I've had a lot of those. I've had in the early days. I say the early days. We're only talking like 6 months ago. It's really funny actually. So when I was learning to sup paddle, we've got this offshore ocean run, which, you know, it's probably about 12 kilometers or so. And I have paddled that so many times, just, you know, not got up on foil at all, or got up twice. And like, you know, over, you know, when I was learning. So I'm very familiar with paddling that run. And I thought those days were gone. I thought they were all over. And then I went out with the Parawing and I did this run with some friends, and sure as, you know, as you like, it died, and I couldn't get up, and I had to actually prone paddle the whole way back into the beach. I think it took me about an hour and a half of paddling.
Wow.
Yeah. with, you know, in shark infested Australian waters. It's horrible.
How is that for you when you swim back or something doesn't go to plan, especially when you were learning? Are you a guy that just stays calm, or are you like cursing at everything and everyone there is?
No, I don't stay calm at all. I'm a cursor. Yeah.
Good to know. I thought I'd be the only one.
Yeah, I did actually have a shark incident where I was, it's a long story short, is that I picked up the wrong foil. I was in a rush. This is sup paddling. And we were at the end point. We all met up and I was late and everyone was like, come on, we got to go. And I picked up the wrong foil. I picked up a 700 instead of my normal, whatever it was, 1,000 I was using. They all looked the same. Shit. I just picked it up. And because I was so rushed and I was like, you know, I didn't even notice until we got on the water and I couldn't paddle up. And I was like, I got seaweed on or something. And by this time, all the rest of the guys had gone. And I flipped the board upside down and I saw like the 700 on the side. And I was like, no. And at this point, I drifted so far, like there was no going back. So I was like, oh, I'm just going to just try and get it up. And anyway, 20 minutes later, this fin pops up. Gosh. And it just starts doing an orbit around me. And I absolutely shit myself. Like, it was a horrible experience. Like, I had never wanted to get onto land as quickly as possible. And I just didn't know what to do. I was like, look, I can't swim. I can't go anywhere. Phoning someone's not going to help. You know, I've just got to just gently just paddle and hope it. And it just kept on doing like orbits around me this entire time. And what was worse, it would go down, disappear. And that was the point where it was horrible because I was like, you know, this is now coming to attack, I reckon. Yeah. But nothing happened. In fact, actually, what did happen was this like random rogue set came through. And I think I had so much adrenaline, I actually paddled up the 700.
Nice.
And I had never, like, I got up and I just pumped. Like, you can, you know, like you never imagine. I was just so determined not to fall down. So, yeah, that was a pretty airy experience. But
that is a great. Yeah. I think, or for me, it would help to know that underneath that there are like sharp foils, and maybe if a shark attacks, that these sharp foils would somehow kind of stop it. But you never know.
I think they're just interested in other things. To be honest with you, like, you do get, you know, obviously we do get shark attacks out here, but you do kind of get used to it. And actually, we were chatting about this the other day. The thing that I'm more concerned about is whales. We have huge amount of, when it comes into whale season, they're everywhere. And like, you know, if you hit one of those, you're not going to come out very well. So they're the ones I worry about a little bit more. But anyway,
all right. All right.
Nature.
Gav, what we're going to do now, usually I have a certain part in the podcast where I make a break and like tell people about their sponsor that we don't have yet. But let's take this moment for you to plug Bear Cottage, because I've heard about it many times already. I'm going to prepare dinner or lunch real quick for my kids, so I'll be back in 1 or 2 minutes. And you can just have people or tell people what Bear Cottage is all about and how they can support you. Is that okay?
Do you want me just to talk to the camera?
Yes, that would be awesome.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, let's go.
All right. All right, so the whole purpose of the channel is to raise money for Bear Cottage, which is a children's hospice based here in Sydney. So they provide 24-hour palliative care for pediatrics. And it is a government-run organization, but they are woefully underfunded. And so the whole point of the channel is to raise money through auctions. All the advertising money goes to it, and donations. So the audience is really generous. They donate. And the whole point of it is that at the end of the year, coming up to Christmas, we fly one of the rescue helicopters into their facility with Santa. And, you know, we give all the presents that people have donated over the year. And at that point is when I'm going to hand over the full amount that I've raised in that year. And the aim is something around $10,000, which, you know, that's the aim. And that's the whole purpose of the channel and everything else. And I'm actually going to document the whole thing. And then that's going to be obviously put onto the channel so people can see where their money's gone. You know, the people that have donated or who have bought stuff through the auction. So yeah, it's a good cause, and it gives me a sense of purpose. I work closely with them with my work as well. So, it's got a personal tone to it as well. So yeah, and the brands that that support me on this journey as well. They definitely need a mention. So the big one is Code Foils. They're the, you know, obviously I ride them. They're great foils. But Josh and James and the rest of the boys have been so generous, you know, in this cause. They just didn't hesitate to jump on board, and you know, and behind the scenes they do loads of stuff as well. I want to do a big thank you to those guys. Absolute legends.
Thank you very much. So cool. I've obviously heard that story many times, and then I saw that you auctioned this foil, which is amazing. And really,
yeah,
the Code guys, when they were here in Switzerland, like Ben, yeah, Marcus and Josh, super cool guys. So really cool that, yeah, they helped. And how did that go for you? Was it going the way you planned? Was it more or less than you expected?
Yeah, it was way more. Yeah. Like it went really well. Like I was a bit nervous that people, I don't know, would try and like play the system a little bit, because I was just doing it on YouTube. So I've never done that before. I don't think anyone's done an auction on YouTube before, but not to my knowledge. And so, but the community just pulled together. It was great. You know, it wasn't one of my most successful videos in terms of views, but that wasn't important. It was the money it raised. And what happened is when people got outbid, they then donated, which is just epic. Cool. Yeah. So like it was a great, and it was so successful. I'm going to do another one actually towards the end of the year. So probably going to do like a Christmas hamper of just smaller stuff. The funny thing is that, like, because I said in the video that I would like send it anywhere in the world within reason, obviously, you know, if it was in Timbuktu, I'm not going to be able to ship it there. But you couldn't have got further away. There was a guy in Scotland that won it in the end, so I had to send it all the way to Scotland. But that's fine. That was cool, and he's stoked. He loved it. So yeah, it worked out incredibly well. I was, you know, wasn't sure how it was going to go, but everybody, the whole foiling community got behind me, and lots of people were posting it, and yeah, great. It worked out
very
really well.
Cool. Yeah. Very cool. So that's really, I mean, your channel is super interesting for me as a viewer, as a learner, but also that, yeah, the purpose that you set, it's really amazing. I haven't seen something like that on YouTube before, really. See people, yeah, who want just to show how good they are, maybe make a little money out of it. And for you, it's got everything. It's really, yeah, amazing.
But it's interesting, is like you said at the start with, this isn't my natural habitat. I hate doing the YouTube videos. I dislike it. It's not I don't mind editing it. Like I can sit there and just edit I hate the recording of the videos. It's a real chore for me. And I'm not naturally that gifted at doing it. I don't like it. Like it's not something that, you know, that's drawn to me. So it puts me out of my comfort zone. That's for sure.
Let's get into that. Cause the first video I saw now was when you reviewed a wing. I think it was the first video I saw, but I'm not sure anymore. Even it was over a year ago, is where you showed how to pack up a wing.
Oh yeah.
And pack it, yeah, tightly in your backpack. Yeah. I think it was you. I'm not even anymore. But that was, yeah, great.
Oh yeah, really? Okay.
Yeah, really great. And I always wanted to do that. I bought some Velcro. Wanted to attach it to my paddle. And that, yeah, was just when I learned that here in Switzerland you can actually take the train for shuttles and don't need the wing. So
amazing. That's great.
It is really great. Also really fun because you're in your wetsuit. It was in December and January, so really cold, like 6-7 degrees outside, raining, snowing, and then you're in the train wet with your wetsuit on, helmet and everything, and people in their suits going to work and
go to work.
Look at it's really fun. It's really fun. So I never actually used that, but then I saw your paddling videos. I tried to do similar things, but I can only go on the water like maybe once or twice a month with the paddle. And that's not enough.
No, it's not enough. Yeah.
So that needs a lot of more, you know, work.
Like, interestingly, that is, I think this is you're the prime candidate for getting into power winging over paddling. Because I absolutely agree that, you know, it's the paddle does like outperform a power wing in lots of conditions, but the big barrier to entry is not only the skill, the fitness, but the time. I think that's the biggest barrier, is that for me, I had to put in so much time consistently to get good. Even we were talking about it the other day, actually, the guys when we were doing the shuttle, like I'm at a point now where I can have a break from paddling, come back, and it's all muscle memory now. But, you know, a year ago, if I had done that, it was like going back to square one again. You know, I'm figuring everything out, like the board, the foil, the, you know, the strokes, like everything was just such a new experience that I would be, you know, I'd take one step forward and then five steps back, and it'd be so frustrating. And so with powerwinging, it's not the same. You don't have that massive time requirement or muscle memory to build. It's very quick. And so that's why I think it will resonate with lots of people that were potentially getting into paddling. Now, I don't want to put people off paddling because it's amazing. And I love the journey. And interestingly, I'm like this with every sport I do, apart from powerwinging, which I'll talk about in a moment why. But when I first saw winging, I thought it was rubbish and I didn't really want to get involved in it. And then I got into it and got really hooked and loved it. And I was dissing downwinding with a paddle for the best part of like
really
a year, because there's a real diehard crew here in Sydney, you know, because of Josh and James mainly. And, you know, these guys are all my mates. And I was just like looking at them do these runs. I was like, why would you do that? Like, it's just so much pain for not. And then I got on the journey because of the YouTube channel, because I wanted to document it. And I got so addicted to it. Like, I just wanted to, that's all I wanted to do. Not only because of the, you know, the success, because I just genuinely enjoyed it. I enjoyed the physical element of it, the little stepping stone of key successes that you'd go along the journey. So, you know, I would definitely recommend it to people. Like, I don't want people to not do it and just sack it off and go powering. What I'm saying to people is that if you're in a scenario where you do not have the time, then I would suggest powerwinging is a better route. Now, on that note, so I'm just rabbiting on here, but when you were talking about that video with the wing on the back, the pack down, so I was looking for something that would allow me to go into the eye of wind and then self-position. That I was looking for it everywhere, and that was the closest thing I came to. It was these pack downs. And so as soon as the power wing came out, I just jumped at it. I was like, my God, this is exactly what I'm after. And I just needed to know that it would take you upwind. Like that was all I cared about. I was just like, please, can this thing? So I bought it blind, the BRM, the original, the OG. And I got it. And, you know, as soon as I got it, I knew that it was this golden ticket to taking me into the eye of the wind, so I could just do runs on my own terms. Because I was just finding with the shuttles, I was just out of sync with a lot of people. And because of my rosters, like I, you know, if I do a night shift, then I would have missed, you know, I missed the boat. The guys have gone because I was sleeping. And then like, I'd get up at like 11 o'clock and, you know, the wind would then kick in. I'd be on my own and I'd like, oh, okay. So I was just doing these pack downs all the time.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, the powering when it came out was just my ticket to downwind on my own terms.
Did it go upwind the way you thought it would go?
Yeah, it did. Exactly how I thought it would. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. That was the big thing for me. I was like, it has to be able to go upwind at a rate that's, and it did. The first one was like, I had no problems with going. I think it took two sessions. And then the third session, I was doing loops. I was going upwind, packing it down and coming down again.
All right. I want to get into the different power wings and maybe some techniques as well. But first, we were talking about your videos when you packed the wing. And then you said that you wanted to try that subfoiling because you wanted to make a video. Do you think it was just going to be like a two-parter and it's going to be not that difficult, or did you expect it to be as difficult?
No, I did expect it to be really difficult. Yeah, I did, because I knew so many people that had gone down the journey before. In fact, in my mind, it was harder than it actually was, and I think it was because I enjoyed it. And so,
okay,
yeah, like with all these sports, the hardest bit was very much the first like month or two when I couldn't even paddle straight. I couldn't even like, for the first like five sessions, I was just going around in circles. And then I'd go on the ocean.
Did you start in the flat or in the bumps already?
So a bit of both. Like I did a couple sessions in the flat, and then I got fixated on trying to flat water paddle up, which was a mistake because I spent so much time trying to do that. And then I eventually did it. And I thought I'd just go into the ocean and I'll be up and I'm going. And that I was right back to square one because I couldn't stand on the board. Yeah, I was just like, okay. I physically couldn't stand on the board. So flat water paddle ups are good. They're a really good training tool. But I think I say this in the video, like my advice to people is to go in flat water for 3 to 5 sessions and then get in the ocean. Don't worry about trying to flat water paddle up. That's not a, you know, it's almost, I don't want to say the words, but it's almost a bit like a party trick. Like,
yeah, that's what I heard from Jonas. Yeah.
It doesn't help you. in the early stages of paddling up in waves. It's a very different technique. Now, that being said, like I then revisit and I do flat water paddle up now. Whenever I get a new foil or a new board, that's how I know what the foil or the board is like. And so I still do that now. And I do it occasionally, just like if it's completely flat, there's no waves, there's no wind. It's just a bit of exercise. Like it's just a really, it's better than going to the gym or going for a run.
Yeah. Have you ever done dock starting?
I have actually. I've done a video on that as well.
Oh, I haven't seen that one.
Yeah, yeah. So that was my first introduction to dock starting. So I've only ever done it once and I was on that video. And again, that's the classic example of just having the right gear and the right tech and having somebody telling you exactly what to do. You know, just I did it in about, I think it took me about 12. I did it in 12 goes, 12 attempts.
Nice.
But that's because I had somebody coaching me, like someone saying, no, you got to do this right now. And also, of course, I could pump, I could foil.
That helps a lot. That helps a lot.
I was really used to big foils as well because I had been downwinding them. Yeah. So I was really, and I think that helps, is that I knew exactly how to get a big foil up off the water, how to keep it high on the mast, like how it turns and how the delay and body position. So all of that, I didn't have to learn. So,
all right. That helps a lot. Cause when we had Josh and Ben and Marcus over, also for them, the start was not as easy, but you saw that as soon as they were on the board and had the speed, that they were very good foilers. So that's really good to see. I haven't seen that video though. I have to revisit that or just like check it out. I want to still stick on the videos because you said that you're not super comfortable doing videos. The one where you packed the wind, you had a drone shot, if I recall correctly. Who helps you? What are the difficulties for you? Especially what I see when I want to make a parawing video, the tangling is even worse. Yeah, how do you do that?
So I do it all on my own. There's no other person doing it.
Wow,
occasionally,
really?
I'll throw somebody a GoPro. There's a couple of really good downwinders who they can downwind on autopilot and just film me. I've done a couple of those with the power wing, but otherwise it's all done on my own. And so the drone shots you see are from, it's a drone called Hover. It's the Hover X Pro or something or other. I can't remember the name of it. It's quite a new brand, but it's a tracking drone that follows you around, like a point of view thing. And it's designed for bikes and it's designed for, you know, it's not designed for water. And I've lost three of them.
Really?
Yeah. Expensive mistake. I haven't, because it does actually, two of them were malfunctions. And so I got them off warranty. But the third one, they said, no, that's just you, which is both to be fair.
That's enough now.
Yeah, yeah. So, otherwise I have to just do it on my own. I just find it awkward asking people, you know.
It takes time out of their day and filming you, that's difficult.
Yeah.
All right, hang on, Gav, just one sec. The oven is digging
away.
I have to take the spring rolls out. I'll be back in 1 minute. Sorry.
No, good.
You can probably still hear me though.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, I'm back. I'm back. Sorry about that.
No, it's all good, mate. All good.
So you film everything by yourself. You have a GoPro and that following drone, but it's different. If you film yourself with a wing, you have the wing that you can use as a selfie stick. If you paddle, you have the paddle as a selfie stick. With the parawing, it's different though.
Yeah. Well, I do use a selfie stick as well. It's just, I've just got quite good at like knowing where to put it and with the lines and what have you. It is challenging, but predominantly it is with a GoPro, you know, and I do a lot of the shots just holding it out. Because I'm in the harness, and so I can hold it one hand.
Okay.
And then I can, you know, the other hand can be doing that. And then you quickly get to a stage where you can fly it without looking at it. It's a bit like kiting. So then I can just hold the GoPro. And then what I do is, you know, when it's all packed away, I can then bring out a selfie stick and then have it there. Actually, it's interesting you asked that because I have, as the videos are progressing, you know, other people's standard gets higher. I have looked into asking some people about, you know, perhaps hiring them to do a drone follow me for an hour or so. It's just difficult getting the, you know, the conditions got to be right. You've got to have time off. They've got to have time off. Like all those things have got to line up. And what happens quite regularly with the gear that I get, like, or I buy from a brand to review it or whatever, is I have a finite period, you know, where I need to get it out because it's getting marketed at the same time. And it's all about like who gets the first one out of like, this is the, so there's always a time, like time period to it. And so 9 times out of 10, I find that just a good old GoPro is pretty good. Like if you just manage that well.
Have you ever drowned one, or is it attached to you somewhere on your heart?
No, like I've never lost one actually, because I just got the waterproof housing on it, and it always just seems to float up at the beach. I've dropped a lots of them, but they just they always just seem to, like, I've never dropped one out in the open ocean, but in the surf I do it all the time, and it just bounces around, and you know, I just find it again.
Lucky you, man. I was with Dominic Hoskins from a foil driver. I was on the Markermeer in the Netherlands, and we had like maybe 2 hours, great session. And then in the last 20 minutes, he fell and he somehow like bumped his arm on his board, and then the camera was gone.
Oh,
it wasn't only the camera that was gone, all the footage was gone as well. So that kind of sucks. But with the Parawing, because yes, once I'm up, I can also fly it with one hand and like use the camera somehow. But I usually have it attached to another kind of harness just for the Insta360. But yes, it gets tangled, obviously.
So I found that like the Insta360, if you have it on a harness at the back, that is going to get attached onto something. Those lines will end up being on it. And so what I found is that like having the GoPro in a mouth mount, like having it on there, like that's the best way of being able to get like the big full video, and then take it out and you can look at yourself and look at the Parawing, and you know, and that's, I think that's probably the safe way to go at the beginning. And then once you get better, then you get all more organized, then you can start putting poles out. Because honestly,
I hate having something like that in my mouth. I don't do that. It's terrible. Have you used the Parawing just for free riding though?
No, I don't, to be honest with you. Like if it's not good bumps, I don't use it. Yeah, I think winging is better for it. Like it's just, there's a bit of bigger wind range. Like you can do more with a wing. It's more versatile at the moment. I just don't. Yeah, I'm certainly not going to be going down any freestyle route or anything like that. You know, I have done it just to test power wings. Like when a new one comes, and I just want to try it out. I've done that, just gone backs and forwards. But I think for me, the power wing really just sits for me. Just sits in one place, which is self positioning. Like, yeah. I know there's, you know, the new BRM, for example, has got three different disciplines. And I know that, you know, there's another one, I think Gong have got some for like, they call them low kites, right? For free riding. I just don't see, for me personally, I just don't see the appeal for that. I just think there are better alternatives, you know, that we've got right now. So this self-positioning, being able to put yourself in the eye of the wind when it's onshore and get bumps that you otherwise wouldn't be able to, or indeed go to areas where the bumps are really good and just stay there. Yeah. I know Forrat talks about it a lot, like
all the time. High performing.
That's what he says are high performing areas. And that's what I was doing today. You just orbit that really good spot. And that's where it comes into its own, in my opinion. Like, I know it will be used for lots of different things, but, you know, I think that's where it's, you know, for me, it is where
If you don't
good.
Mind, I want to get into the different Parawings later on and what makes a good Parawing. Just one last question about your films, your YouTube. You have an Instagram channel as well, but your YouTube is way bigger, and YouTube videos usually take way longer to edit, to produce. Yeah. How much time do you spend, like, a week editing YouTube videos?
It really depends on like how many videos I'm doing at the time. Like I ebb and flows really. But the beauty of it is that, so you know, as I'm a rescue pilot, so that's my job. So I do a lot of sitting around waiting for the phone to go. So that's the time when I edit. So I'm just at work.
Wow, perfect.
So my colleagues are like watching movies whilst I'm just going digga digga digga, you know, just editing away. And I, as I said to you earlier, I enjoy doing it. It just, I find it quite therapeutic, like just, you know, my mind just switches off and I guess go do 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 into my own little world. And then when the phone goes, then it's action stations and it just, you know, close laptop, off you go. And so it's really, it depends on the shift, the swing, the day. Like, you know, some days we're out all day, some days you don't get anything. So I have 12 hours of just twiddling my thumbs, and that's where I do my editing. So it works really well.
That is perfect. If you can do that kind of on working hours, that's amazing.
There's a balance to be had with everything. And like, you know, at work, they're very, what's the word I'd describe it? Like, you know, we call it big boys rule. So essentially, as long as you are passing your tests and you are performing well, they don't care what you do. There's a lot of study. There's a lot of like exams we have to do every 3 months. We go through a week cycle of like exams and theory and practicals. And, you know, so, you know, that time, you have to manage it. I can't just like sit and play games or whatever.
Yeah, makes sense.
As long as you're passing the tests and you're performing well, they don't care. They're just like, you know.
Super cool. While we're on that topic, have you ever had to rescue like a friend of yours or someone you were out?
Yeah, I have. A few times actually. Yeah. In fact, nobody, I haven't rescued a friend who was actually in trouble, but we've been called to them all. We get called to them all the time. Like it's a regular occurrence. Like, yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. So, well, back in the day, well, I say back in the day, it still happens a lot. Like we get calls for kite surfers because a member of the public sees a kite surfer fall over and they call in a parachute has fallen in the ocean. And we can't not go because of that one in a million when it is a parachute. So you quite often will go out and then all of a sudden, like, you know, you can just see it. And you know, like if it's a nor'easter sunny day at four, you know, at three in the afternoon at Kite Beach, you know, funny old thing, you know, it's not going to be a parachute. But the beauty of it is that it's not necessarily, I discussed this on quite a few different.
Yeah, with Freddie and Liam, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. But like the beauty of it is that we're then airborne and it means that we can, not only are we like training whilst we're doing it, but it means we're really quick in getting retasked. And so what regularly happens is we'll be on the way back from that and there will be like a kid who's just been hit by a car. And we are super quick because we're already in the air.
Yeah.
So sometimes we can be on station within like seconds of it happening. Minutes of it happening. Yeah. And so those scenarios happen quite regularly. So it's not necessarily a bad thing. And it's why we don't really push against it. So it seems like an awful waste of taxpayers' money. But in reality, it's actually really good for several reasons. As I said, It means we're on station really quick for other jobs and also we train much more, you know, and so we're better when the conditions are really bad. So yeah, you come, you know.
That is impressive. Thing. Do you have any like co-workers that started foiling because of you as well?
Yeah, I did. I sold them some foils actually. I sold them my old foils. Yeah, quite a few people have got into it. Quite a few, I'd say. I think it's just the nature of pilots were quite like active people. So off the top of my head, there's six guys that have started foiling. Yeah. So they cool. love it.
If they ask you something, you just say, yeah, watch that video here. I explain it.
Yeah, yeah. Like and subscribe, comment.
So cool. That is really impressive because yeah, you talked about it on the other shows as well. And I imagine sometimes you're out there in gnarly conditions. Sometimes you might be in conditions where it's like, oh, that would be nice to run now. You look at the waves.
All the time. Like we do coastal trips all the time. Like if we're coming from a hospital. And it normally happens, we call it dead legs, where you've dropped the patient off the hospital and then you're just coming back to the base. And you always go the scenic route, you know, down the coast. And you just look down and you're just like mind surfing and mind downwinding. And you're like, oh, look at that. Oh, that looks amazing. And I quite often like on my map, just highlight breaks that, you know, I'm like, wow, I've got to check that out. That looks epic. And then, you know, and I send it to myself.
Scouting good place as well. Yeah, working. Yeah, that is amazing. That's so cool. So let's maybe go towards these parawings because you've become the parawing expert, I would say, because you tried so many different things, made reviews about it. And is there a parawing where you would say, well, this one I haven't tried yet, really want to like get to know it?
So the one I'm dying to try is the F1 frigate.
Yeah, not here yet.
I've heard really good things about that. That's the one that I'm desperate to get my hands on. But there's so many good things out there at the moment. And my point at the start, you know, remember I learned on the original, the OG, and that's still a great power wing. You know, Greg, you know, amazing. And like he's now done tweaks to the original one. And I used it the other day. And it's brilliant. Like the changes to that original one. I say that to all my friends trying to get into it. It's like, if you can find a cheap V1 BRM, they're the ones to get. Because they're really cheap and they're great. They're really good.
What makes a good parawing? And obviously it depends how you're using it. If you just use it to get up and pack it away, you want as small as possible, a lot of low end.
Yeah.
But if you want to maybe like do turns, go a little upwind, downwind, like a good average, good for everything parawing, what do you have to look out for?
So yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head there, mate. It all depends on what it is you're after. And for me, as I mentioned, I want a powering that puts me into places that you can't with a paddle, or I don't have a shuttle. So I need it to go upwind really well. And so going upwind really well means having a relatively high aspect ratio, but the most important factor is it being stable, and particularly in the upper end. Like with winging, every power wing has its upper and lower ranges. I found that the lower range for me isn't quite as important. It is when you're learning, I think, but for me, you end up like, you get a technique, you get around it. So I either, you know, my experience or my board or my foil allows me to get around that bottom end. The top end, there's nothing you can do about that. Like if it's overpowered and out of control because of the way it's made or designed, then you can't compensate for it. So that's really important for me. So being able to be stable in its real upper end, so being extremely overpowered. So what I'm talking about is a 4 meter in 35 or 30 knots.
Like wow,
that for me is an indication of a good power wing.
Which one is that?
There's lots that do that. So
really?
Yeah. So BRM V2s are excellent at it. The Flow are excellent at it. So the only ones I've used is the Kanaha.
Yeah. Okay.
But I've heard they're all good. The Flow is good at doing that. The Ozone is excellent at doing that. I was out on the Ozone. That was the one that was out in 40, 45, 48 knots.
Wow.
That was incredible.
Crazy. The POW should be good as well, I heard.
POW's good. Yeah. The POW is very grunty though. Like it's very, okay. it's got a lot of power to it. Like a lot of power. I found
is that comparable to the North as well?
The North's top
in
end
terms of grunt?
Yeah. Oh yeah. So the grunt of the North is really good. But it doesn't have a very good top end.
Yeah.
So I don't put that for me personally as a good power wing because it doesn't allow me to go upwind and be overpowered. So the nature of this overpowered business, it's quite difficult to describe it without you having experienced it. But so getting up onto foil is really hard with a power wing. So you need power. You need lots of energy to be able to get up initially. And then as soon as you get up onto foil, you need to get rid of that power. And so having a wing that can cope with that power is really important. And so at the early stages, they struggled with it a little bit. But as I said, the BRM V2s are excellent. The Flow, the Ozone, I've heard the Frigate is amazing at it. There's loads of them that are good. Like it's, and as I said, other ones are better for other things. Like the North is an excellent learning one because of its low-end grunt. The original BRM is good for learning because of its low-end grunt. Ease of use, you know, I'm trying to think of another one that's really
Have you tried the Aaron?
No, I haven't actually. I haven't tried that one.
Yeah. Okay, because I have it here and I'm going to test it next week in the flat. And I'm really excited about that. I also have 2 plumes with me next week.
Oh, the plumes, yeah.
You've tried them?
Yeah.
But not for downwinding, obviously. You cannot pack them away.
I did a downwind run on it. Yeah.
But not packing them away.
No, but I just did a proper like shuttle downwind run and it was really annoying.
Annoying than a regular wing, I suppose, or not?
Yeah, less annoying than a regular wing. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. It was only annoying because it was flaps. Like it just, it's like holding a kite upside down. It just goes the whole time.
Like a plastic bag just. Okay.
That's right. Yeah. Okay. And so I think in my mind, I had it like a wing dragging behind you as you were going downwind, but if you flip it upside down, it sits in front of you. But it's definitely got its place. I wouldn't go out and buy one because I think of my experiences with really like quality power wings can now cope with the upper echelons. But if you lived in a windy place, I think one of those would be great. And again, it's just doing little short like loops is really good for it. So perhaps you're just going upwind because it goes upwind incredibly well.
And the top end also, it's really...
The top end is unbelievable. Like it is like the best you'll ever experience. It's way easier than a wing, a power wing, anything. Like, I think you'd be hard pressed to be overpowered with one of those things.
Okay.
And so if I lived somewhere like, I'm trying to think of a crazy wind, the Canary Islands, Gran Canaria, for example, like that, you would just be like downwind in heaven with one of those things because you crank up wind and then you can just hold it and then go downwind again. And then also, I mentioned in the video that I did is that I think it'd be really good in waves because there's just less things to go wrong than a power wing. And I've had some really bad experiences with a power wing in waves. In fact, Josh Koo nearly killed himself.
Yeah, I heard that story, man.
Yeah. And so you just got to be really careful with it. You've got to be really disciplined with your pack away, be not connected to it, like just be able to accept that it's going to go and have a knife on you. Like,
do you usually have a knife on you?
I do. Yeah. I have a little hook knife, like the old kite safety knife. I started using those. Yeah.
Makes sense. So, the first time or the only time I held it in my hands, the plume, was again with Dominic. We're in the North Sea. It was really gnarly conditions, and he usually goes on foil drive, obviously. And he used it just to go upwind, because foil driving against the waves, against the wind, use a lot of battery, and it's really a pain. So with the plume, it actually makes sense, because you can still pack it quite easily, easy than a wing. So that made a lot of sense. And holding it on the beach, super stable.
Really incredible. I think you'll have fun with them, but it's just you've got to go out when it's windy. It's really easy to use, and it's like an incredible, like if you have access to it, like 100%, like would I say go out and buy one? Well, I mean for sure, like it's, you know, I had great time on it, and it will get you downwinding way quicker than anything else will, because also you can hold it and downwind properly, you know. It's not like, so you can learn to really read the bumps with it up in the 12. So it's not a gimmick, I promise you. It's a real, you know, it's a nice extra to have for sure. But if you've got the money or you've got the access to one, then for sure get it. Yeah.
And it really, for learning to read the bumps, I think it's better than a regular wing, because the regular wing, I take it back too quickly. I like rely on it too much.
So it's a really good point, actually. So learning to downwind with a wind wing is cheating. Even if you hold it, like, so people that downwind with it in the 12 o'clock, like holding it, it gives you about 20%, you know, of lift. And that's the difference between like falling off or reading the bump. And then...
And also stability. Like, exactly. You have something to hold on to. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. The only way that it's acceptable in my view is if you put it behind you and you don't touch it, and you tell yourself, I'm gonna fall before I get it out.
But then it flaps over and taps you in the back of the
head. That's right, Or you could, but then you've got to be going fast enough for it just to fall behind. It's not ideal. Like, there's no two ways about it. And that's why I kind of stopped doing it, because it was
I think you're just swinging when it's flat then.
No, in waves. Wing in waves. Yeah, that's for me is, I love it. Like, I haven't had a session for ages, and I went out the other day in some really good waves, and it was so good. Like, I had such a great time. It was, you know when you forget how good something is.
It's back. It's a novelty again, which is always interesting.
Exactly,
I find
that.
Yeah, that's true. Exactly. Maybe because you've talked about it in your videos as well, but just like as a reminder, because next 2 weeks is going to be all parawing for me. Because when I take the parawing in, I don't stack it yet, and I won't stack it when I'm going to be in Silla Plana, because there are no waves really. I usually like tilt the bar to the front and take the front lines or everything with the front lines. I've seen people taking the front, the brake lines, or just a few of the strings just to take it in. Yeah. What, in your opinion, is the best way and why?
So front lines, so the A lines, like they're the ones that I will always take when I'm doing a very quick downwind run. So, or if I'm catching a wave, or I'm on the beach, you know, and I want to get rid of it on the, because you can do that when you're powered. And so that's the first one to do. So if your first couple of stashes or takedowns, you grab the bar at the front, and you just grab all of the lines, and you just go, and you basically, your hands separate. It's important to do both hands. So a lot of people just move one hand up the lines, whereas you've got to go backwards and forwards. So both arms are extending. That makes sense. And then, so do that first couple of times, and then you can literally just hold it like that in your hand. The key to it is to go right up to the leading edge, so make sure you've got no lines showing, but you do have a lot of lines and a lot of material. So it's kind of like, and what I tend to do if I'm doing that, if I'm on a wave or I'm doing a real quick, I was doing this today, is then I'll put the bar under my arm at that point, and then it's like a skirt. So I'll fold it over the top of it and then put the bar back on again. So now I've got like I'm holding a collection of material here, but all the lines are in there.
Okay.
And then the beauty of it is when you want to redeploy, you know that the leading edge is on the front here. So the ozone has got a white leading edge. It's why I go on about this in my videos all the time about the color schemes. It's so important, because that's, you know, now I know that I can just like dangle it and it will just open out, and then I can go boom, boom, and then off you go. So that's the first way of doing it. And I'd recommend people doing that first couple sessions just to get used to it. You know, you can practice that on the beach. The next one, which is the full pack away, full stall, it takes a little bit more skill. And the key to it is you've got to match the speed of the power wing so it goes limp in your hands. It basically stalls itself. If you try and do it on the beach, you'll notice it's really difficult to do it. So you've basically got the way in which you can simulate that on the beach is to run downwind. Yeah. And then you lose all the apparent wind and then you can just get rid of it. And the key to that is to put your hand on the bar, the bottom of the bar, and then turn it and then just grab all the lines. And it's really important that you grab. That's why my hand always goes on the bar so that I can grab all the lines and then do this. And again, the key to it is to go both hands in opposite directions so that you gather as much material as possible. So if you leave lines like dangling, it will then spin and then you're going to have a mess.
Yeah,
so
you've
got to go right to the edge and then it stops it from spinning.
Was it you giving that tip? I'm not sure, because someone said it doesn't matter if you take A or C lines, but if you take it like this, then when you're all on the canopy, that you twist the bar again. When you're all out, it gets symmetrical again. That was an amazing tip, I think.
So you can do a little, because normally what happens is you're like this, and so all of the lines won't be taut, and so by doing that, it then tightens all the lines.
Yeah, that was a super amazing tip. Yeah, thank you for that.
And then the pack away, there's lots of different ways. And to be honest with you, it, at that point, you just got to be systematic. You've got to come up with a way of doing it and do it every time. And so it's difficult to explain it without having the thing, but I concertina it, I then wrap it and then roll it. And then I have it in my hand and pack it away. And so that for me, it took me quite a while to come up with my own little system of doing that. And it works like seamlessly. Like I'd say like 1 in 30 deploys are tangled now. More often than not, it is, you know, it deploys perfectly every time now. I very rarely get tangled. Like it's a very, when I get a tangle, something hasn't gone right in the process. Like I've messed up the chosen the wrong wave, or I haven't downwinded properly. And that technique, the reason why it's challenging is you've got to downwind at the same time as packing away. Yeah. So you've got to be able to downwind on autopilot, which is why it's challenging. Or you can be like Josh Koo and then just grab it and then pump into wind, sort it out, and then pump back again. And then he was incredible. Like when I was doing that lesson with him, it was frustrating.
I don't know if he made a video about it or he told me about it. How was that for you? Because obviously he's a super good foiler. And we've seen videos of Dave where he was not super happy with the parawing at first. Now it seems like he found the use case for it. But with Josh, it was different.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? The Dave Wester, like I think he's right in what he says. That it's, I think it's a lot of it is location based. But I disagree with some of the things he says. Actually, I have to be honest with you, because I 100% know that, because we have very similar conditions than he has, and so. And I've made it work. And in fact, actually, I've not only made it work, I've made it incredible. Like, you know, I pick the points where I can have a great time. And you just got to use the right gear. You got to be persistent. Yeah. Blah, blah, blah. But he is, what he's saying is absolutely correct. Like it has its place. It definitely doesn't replace the paddle, but that's easy to say if you've already learned to paddle. Like if you already can paddle, then it's easy to say, right? Like if someone's saying to me right now, I've got a power wing and I've got a paddle, you've got to learn one of these, I'm taking a power wing every day. Like,
really?
No, 100%. Because it's just not everybody has the luxury of being able to go out, as we mentioned earlier on, like every single day. You know, that's what it takes. It really does. So anyway, but teaching Josh was funny because, you know, his skill level is ridiculous. Like it doesn't do it justice watching him on camera. Like when you prone with him and you're in the... Like it is ridiculous what he's doing. Like it is incredible, and you know, and so you're connecting waves and like doing some turns and thinking you look really cool, and then you hear this like, you know, splash spray, and he's like done a 360 landed and then gone off, and you're like, oh, it's just happened, you know. But he's just got this really cool ability to be able to, he lands like a cat, you know. He's just very coordinated. But he doesn't have any wind background, like zero of it. So, you know, he's a surfer through and through. And And so, you know, you can see that lack of knowledge coming through sometimes, but he just compensates for it through his skill. And that's what I found frustrating. I was like, that took me years to like, and he can just like, just dun, 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 just make it work. So yeah, he picked it up pretty quick just because he compensated, you know, and he's already like, in fact, we're doing a run tomorrow. And he's pushing himself like probably a bit too hard, I think, on it. Like he wants to do a run which takes quite a bit of power winging skills. Like you've got to go across a bay and then pack it. And then we're going into like an oncoming big swell, which he'll be fine with once it's packed. But, you know, he's only had like a handful of sessions on it and he's wanting to do this really big send. I'm like, well, I don't know, like he'll make it work. You know, I know he will. But yeah, it was good and frustrating to see him pick it up so quickly. That's for sure. Yeah. I genuinely thought he was going to be worse than he was. Like I thought, when I say he was, he obviously did it in one session, but I thought it was going to be a mega shit show from what I'd heard of him, you know, saying about his winging. He genuinely picked it up like straight away.
But even his winging, I saw some videos. It is amazing as well. Maybe he compares himself to like the pro wingers, but like as an average winger, it's like everything he does is like amazing, really impressive.
But what I take my hat off to Josh about is that he's not scared of being seen to being kooky or not good at something. Like he doesn't put videos out of like him just being amazing at something. He also shows like his, you know, his vulnerabilities. There aren't many, but like when he, you know, when he does, and that's really good. I like that about him is that, he just doesn't care because he knows he'll get it. And
there are a lot of people here in Europe that like 3D print gadgets for their parrowing. Like the one I saw yesterday was someone who built kind of a ring kind of thing.
Yeah.
So it's easier to pack your parrowing away. Yeah. I'm not sure why. And he said, you know, sometimes I hurt my hand a little bit and that's why he did it. I don't see a use case for me at the moment. Do you have anything that you add to your parrowing except for a harness?
No. So like, it's really funny actually. So there's a group on Facebook that is really active with, and it's, you know, I think it's the nature of it. They're all like early adopters and by definition, they're tweakers and tinkers and they, you know, and every day someone comes out with a new way of doing something. And me personally, like I like to just keep it really simple. And I don't think right now, the power wings we've got right now, they don't need any more gadgets or additions. They're perfect how they are. And so I think that you can overcomplicate things. That's what I'm seeing with like, you know, all of these. I mean, I'm sure like manufacturers will come up with an easier way of packing away, but the two methods that I've just described now, if you have the right technique, it works really well. And as I mentioned to you, I don't get tangles. It happens all the time. It's really quick. It's simple and there's nothing to go wrong. And I think like, you know, there's always a better way of doing it, right? But it's interesting, isn't it? Yeah, I'm constantly seeing these new gadgets coming out. Like, don't get me wrong, I'm all for it and I think it's great, but just not for me.
Yeah. Like, and you never know what might come out of it. Maybe exactly something that will come out of it. It's like, oh, well, that's exactly what was
exactly
missing.
That. Yeah. And I'm guilty of it too, because I've been tweaking loads with this stashing and, you know, the backpack I talked about like that, you know, you see a problem, you're trying to come up with a solution to it. And I think naturally the early adopters of power wings are those type of people, I think, which is great. Like, I think it's, you know, but there
it's
are
fun. It's interesting all the time. Listen, Gav, we're already over an hour. I just want to know, A, if you have anything else you want to tell our audience, or maybe you can give us a little, outlook on what's next with you. Are there new power wings that you're going to test? Are there new things you're going to try out? Have you tried foil drive? Maybe you have already and haven't seen the video. What's next with you and your videos?
Yeah, okay. Well, as I said, there are a few power wings on the way. The F1 is the one I can't wait for. But the thing I'm really excited about, like genuinely really excited about, is the AMP board from Flight. I think that's going to be epic. Like, I really, I think it looks slick. I think it's going to really open up, you know, proning, but also for power winging, I think it's going to be amazing. So I've used a foil drive to help me get up onto a power wing, which is amazing because that negates the problem I talked about earlier on, having the power to get up. And then, so you can use a smaller power wing. And then obviously once it goes away, But the problem is with the four drive is just there's a lot going on. You've got the trigger, you've got the pod as well, and the weight and everything else. And I know you're going to have the weight with the AMP board, but everything else disappears. It's autopilot. It just, you know, once it feels you going through the water, it's going to automatically give you the boost to get up. So I think that's going to be epic. So I've got a model coming down to demo, which I'm going to do a video on, and I'm going to focus on the Power Wing element of it, because I think that will be a very expensive addition to Power Winging, but amazing nonetheless. And I think just using it for, I mean, I see it here in our oceans. I constantly see these waves that just unridden, you know, on breaks that are busy, and you're like just onto the shoulder of it where there's just nobody for hundreds of meters, and you're like, oh, I'd love just to be able to get onto that. And Josh does that all the time with the four drive. Like, I see him all the time doing it. So I'm really excited about the AMP. I think that's going to be the next big thing. And I think this is, we'll see the back end of this year. There'll be two things that we'll see. The V2 Power Wings are going to be coming out in Hood River when they do the expo. We'll see loads of brands coming up with their V2. And I think we'll see lots of assists. That's the two big trends we'll see. And then the other trend I think we'll see is people playing around with titanium. I think we'll start seeing titanium popping up in foils. I think that's where we're already seeing it in some fuselages and what have you. But yeah, I think it won't be long before that happens. So they're the three things I think I'm really excited about going forward. The titanium one, I think that's probably a bit way off, and it's probably a bit expensive and blah, blah, blah. But
even more expensive than it already is.
Are you doing
any races as well? Whether it be
So I'm not traveling to do any. Like, I'm going to do, I might be doing, there's a race up north in Queensland, downwind SUP. I might do that one, I'm not sure. And there's one in WA. But I'm just not a big fan of the racing, because I've just been burnt so many times doing it in SUP paddling, because they run a race in any conditions, because it's a date, right? And so you just end up like just competing in really subpar conditions. And so I've done it three times now, and I've not enjoyed a single one of them, because it's been in conditions I wouldn't downwind. Like, you know, you'd be like, I wouldn't go. I'd go and do something else. But
and
because everybody,
something else. Josh told me about when he was in Barcelona that this guy who he didn't even win, I think, but he was like top three. He pumped nonstop.
Yeah.
And then it's different from surfing. Really, it's really an endurance sport, and it's also good, but it's different.
Yeah. But it's really funny. It is human nature to want to race, because we do it on our runs all the time. Like, we start the run and we say, right, it's not a race. That's what we say. Everybody says it. Whoever wins, right? And so it's an ongoing joke. Everybody tries to race. So when you do a downwind run with the group, with the guys, it's like everybody's racing.
And you don't want to be last. That's like the main thing.
I know. And that happens, that, you know, sometimes you just, you know, it takes you a while to paddle up. There's nothing worse than all your mates have paddled up and they're off and you're struggling. Like, it's horrible feeling of like, and it just puts pressure on you, and then you make a mistake. And
makes it even worse.
Yeah.
All right, Gav, thank you so much for coming on the show. Really, it was a big pleasure. I hope that you continue with your videos. They're amazing. I really appreciate that. For the listeners, the viewers, the next episode is going to be with Freddie and Liam from the Generic Foiling Podcast. So we're going to learn about them, actually, why and how they started podcasting. And I've listened to a lot of their episodes, but not everything. They have so many hours out. So, got to learn who's actually the better.
Those guys are really good. I'd listen to all of their stuff. Like, when I'm driving to work, they're so good. I love it. It's also for me, is quite nostalgic, because they're from where I grew up. And so they talk about all these locations, and I wasn't foiling back then. And I'm like, oh God, that would be so good. That'd be cool. And you know, it's really, they're great guys.
All right. So again, thank you very much, Gav. Say hi to Josh for me tomorrow.
I will. I will.
I hope to see you on the water somewhere, or just, I'm going to see you in your videos.
We'll meet up at some point. I'm sure that will happen. Yeah.
That would be amazing.
Thank you. All right. Thanks for taking the time. I appreciate it.
Thanks, man. Have a good night.
Cheers, mate.